First, what makes you think that Quinn, this man of certain standing, you know, wasn't hoodwinking you in order to get you to do exactly what you were doing? Why, it seems scarcely likely that a reputable person would endanger himself in so ridiculous a fashion if he weren't convinced he were on safe ground. There was little humor in Byerly's eyes. You don't know Quinn. He could manage to make safe ground out of a ledge a mountain sheep could not handle. I suppose he showed the particulars of the investigation he claims to have made of me. Enough to convince me that it would be too troublesome to have our corporation attempt to disprove them when you could do so more easily. Then you believe him when he says I never eat. You were a scientist, Dr. Lanning. Think of the logic required. I have not been observed to eat, therefore I never eat. QED. After all, you are using prosecution tactics to confuse what is really a very simple situation. On the contrary, I am trying to clarify what you and Quinn between you are making a very complicated one. You see, I don't sleep much, that's true. And I certainly don't sleep in public. I have never cared to eat with others. An idiosyncrasy which is unusual and probably neurotic in character, but which harms no one. Look, Dr. Lanning, let me present you with a supposititious case. Supposing we had a politician who was interested in defeating a reform candidate at any cost, and while investigating his private life came across oddities such as I have just mentioned. Suppose further that in order to smear the candidate effectively, he comes to your company as the ideal agent. Do you expect him to say to you, so-and-so is a robot because he hardly ever eats with people, and I have never seen him fall asleep in the middle of a case, and once when I peeped into his window in the middle of the night, there he was, sitting up with a book, and I looked in his frigid air, and there was no food in it? If he told you that, you would send for a straitjacket. But if he tells you he never sleeps, he never eats, then the shock of the statement blinds you to the fact that such statements are impossible to prove. You play into his hands by contributing to the to-do. Regardless, sir, began Lanning with a threatening obstinacy, of whether you consider this matter serious or not, it will require only the meal I mentioned to end it. Again Byerly turned to the woman, who still regarded him expressionlessly. Pardon me. I've caught your name correctly, haven't I? Dr. Susan Calvin.
Yes, Mr. Byerly.
You're the U.S. robot's psychologist, aren't you?
Robo-psychologist, please.
Oh. Are robots so different from men, mentally?
Worlds different.
She allowed herself a frosty smile. Robots are essentially decent. Humor tugged at the corners of the lawyer's mouth.
Well, that's a hard blow. But what I wanted to say was this. Since you're a robo-psychologist and a woman, I'll bet that you've done something that Dr. Lanning hasn't thought of.
And what is that?
You've got something to eat in your purse.
Something caught in the schooled indifference of Susan Calvin's eyes. She said, "You surprise me, Mr. Byerly." And opening her purse, she produced an apple. Quietly, she handed it to him. Dr. Lanning, after an initial start, followed the slow movement from one hand to the other with sharply alert eyes. Calmly, Stephen Byerly bit into it, and calmly, he swallowed it. You see, Dr. Lanning? Dr. Lanning smiled in a relief tangible enough to make even his eyebrows appear benevolent. A relief that survived for one fragile second. Susan Calvin said, I was curious to see if you would eat it, but of course, in the present case, it proves nothing. Byerly grinned. It doesn't.
Of course not.
It is obvious, Dr. Lanning, that if this man were a humanoid robot, he would be a perfect imitation. He is almost too human to be credible. After all, we have been seeing and observing human beings all our lives. It would be impossible to palm something merely nearly right off on us. It would have to be all right.
Observe the texture of the skin, the quality of the irises, the bone formation of the hand. If he's a robot, I wish U.S. robots had made him, because he's a good job. Do you suppose, then, that anyone capable of paying attention to such niceties would neglect a few gadgets to take care of such things as eating, sleeping, elimination? For emergency use only, perhaps. As, for instance, to prevent such situations as are arising here. So a meal won't really prove anything. Now, wait, snarled Lanning. I am not quite the fool both of you make me out to be. I am not interested in the problem of Mr. Byerly's humanity or non-humanity. I am interested in getting the corporation out of a hole. A public meal will end the matter and keep it ended no matter what Quinn does. We can leave the finer details to lawyers and robo-psychologists. But, Dr. Lanning, said Byerly, you forget the politics of the situation. I am as anxious to be elected as Quinn is to stop me. By the way, did you notice that you used his name? It's a cheap, shyster trick of mine. I knew you would before you were through. Lanning flushed. What has the election to do with it? Publicity works both ways, sir. If Quinn wants to call me a robot and has the nerve to do so, I have the nerve to play the game his way.
You mean you?
Lanning was quite frankly appalled. Exactly. I mean that I'm going to let him go ahead, choose his rope, test its strength, cut off the right length, tie the noose, insert his head, and grin. I can do what little else is required.
You are mighty confident.
Susan Calvin rose to her feet. Come, Alfred, we won't change his mind for him. You see, Byerly smiled gently. You're a human psychologist, too.